Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and it's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's good to have everybody.
Oh, it is 5 o'clock somewhere, Ross Hill, but feels like more like 8 o'clock here my time. What do you think, Jeremy? Welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, man, it's 8 o'clock on the dot. It's Tuesday night. I'm here for the Ross Hill hour. What about you?
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, it's always great to be here with you, and kicking my butt today, though. I got to tell you, these sinuses are something else, man. I think I set a record today for the amount of sneezes. I don't think I've ever sneezed so hard and so many times in all my life today.
I was going to ask you how you feeling.
Yeah, little worn out still, trying to catch up on sleep from the weekend.
Yep.
You know, it is summertime, and I do live on a lake with a boat.
Hey, you know,
you start adding those up and... Yeah.
Wasn't there like a 90s country song that said something about, you know, having too much fun?
What's that mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
right?
Too much money, no such thing. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, man. So
hey,
how you
know
been
what,
this
man?
Week,
you're,
brother?
I'm good, man. You're living it up. I know you're under the weather a little bit, but, yeah, that's what you get for leaving me out, man. You've been on the lake. I've been getting all these texts. I've been getting all these pictures, and I'm like, I'm going to kill him. I'm like, dang, Scott, every time I turn around, there's a picture from the boat, and I'm like, I'll remember that. I'm going to remember that, I promise.
Jeremy, you know you have an open invite to come on down anytime, bro, my friend.
I know, man. I just got to find the time. That's the problem. Just got to find the time.
That's it. That's it, man. Well,
now,
I got to tell you.
We have
weekend,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I did get to a little bit of some bull riding there Thursday night, was able to catch the PBR showcase there at the Cowtown Coliseum. So, you know, I mean, I'm still hitting the rodeos, just not as often right now.
Yeah.
The PBR's on
man,
a break,
is,
and so am I.
Well, hey, it's a busy week in your part of the world. I know Weatherford, Texas, the Extreme Bulls is actually tonight. And then.
Right.
I guess throughout the week, you know, they'll have the rodeo. Busy time for rodeo, man. June, July, August, that is it, man. It's wide open. You know, you can't call this cowboy Christmas yet. That's really not till the 1st of July. But, man, from July till August, man, these guys are on a run. You know, most guys aren't coming home. They're staying out on the road. And man, it's cool. Just like this is a Tuesday night, and Weatherford, Texas, you know, they're having an Extreme Bulls with – I looked at the purse. I think it pays out. I think it's $60,000 added there. Like, you know, it's going to pay a lot of money to a lot of different guys right there at that Parker County Sheriff's Extreme Bulls. One of my good friends actually fighting the Extreme Bulls. He's not fighting the rodeo, but he'll be there for the Extreme Bulls, Mike Driver. Man, happy to see him there. He's worked it a few years now. They've got him in there, man. Mike's, to me, man, one of the greatest bullfighters to come out of Southeast. Just a gritty, gritty bullfighter. He was the one I was with out there when I come to Fort Worth and saw you there. But, man, you know, he fights a few PBRs and then, man, a lot of the big, big bull rides we have down here. And he's got a slew of really, really good pro rodeos. Saw him fight Hugo, Oklahoma last weekend. So he left Hugo, went to Weatherford. You know, man, just getting to live the dream. So congrats to Mike. I don't know if he's – I know he's busy tonight, but if he does listen in, man, we're proud of you. Keep chasing it because, man, he's done great. So he'll be right there, though, that Weatherford Extreme Bulls. I looked at the lineup of guys entered at it, and, man, it is stacked. Like, when I tell you stacked,
it is
stacked from top to bottom. So I know we had a commitment tonight, but if you're watching there on the Cowboy Channel or whatever – and that is going to be a great, great bull ride to watch.
It is. It is. Absolutely. Obviously, my prior commitment was being here with you on the Ross Hill Hour. But, and I did contemplate, man. I was like, oh, do I go down there for this or do I hang out on the show? And, man, we're going to make our own little rodeo here for the next hour. You know what I mean? So
That's
we're going to sit
right,
back
man.
And have some fun. But, That Extreme Bulls is going to be lights out, man. There's a lot of my friends are heading down to it tonight as well.
Yeah, how far is that from you?
It's about 25 minutes, depending on who's driving.
Okay, that's cool. No, you. I didn't know, man. I knew you were right there close to Weatherford. That's a cool rodeo, and like I said, Cowboy Channel. I know it's aired there, but man, that's just such a cool bull riding. I'm sitting here right now going through the day sheets. I mean, everybody from Cody Teal, Sage Kimsey, I mean, Trey Benton. Like, dude, it is stacked with world champions.
Right.
Declan Garland, IPRA world champion, he's in there. Ernie Corson, the Florida boy, the one we love so much.
Uh-huh.
You know, one of my good friends there. Man, you see Ernie. But, man, it's going to be a big night of bull riding right there. And not that I'm trying to get this over with, but when it is over tonight, trust me, I'm going to the Cowboy Channel to see what's going on there because I want to catch the end of it. And that is a cool bull riding to be a part of. Man, Jeff Aston, that guy's on fire. So just a good deal. And Ernie Corson, I actually watched Ernie. He won, I believe it was Mount Pleasant this past weekend. So as we were talking about Ernie, he is trying to make that move. He's sitting like 10th in the world. Just trying to make that move on this summer run to really win some money to help push those guys to the National Finals Rodeo. You know, we talk about December, you know, you want to be at, you know, on those yellow bucking shoots come December. But, man, you get to Vegas in June, July, August. You know, that's when those guys win that money. That's the time of the year that these guys go. They go so hard. This is when they make that money that just vaults them into the finals, you know. A guy can go win somewhere like Houston. They can win Calgary. You know, they can win those rodeos that pay so good, but that's only one guy. And so one guy might get a jump in the standings, but there's 14 others that are fighting for that spot. You know, last year, man, 15th place, it took over $100,000 to make the NFR. And so those guys have got to win money. And if you look at the statistics of the National Finals Rodeo, every year it takes more and more money to make it. When you get there, man, those rounds, 67,000 added, and that might have went up this year. You know, that's what it was last year, but, you know, that's what it pays per night just in the bull riding and all those. So, man, those guys, they can make a living in 10 days out there. That's just like bonus money for them. So, you want to see a guy Ernie? Ernie never made the national finals, but if he can keep making that push, it would be so cool to see that Florida boy from Okeechobee, Florida. A guy who I watched start his career, man, it would be so cool to see him just push through and make it to Vegas, you know.
You bet.
You've always had guys that you've been around. You see guys that make it, and you're like, you kind of feel like, you know, man, I fought a rodeo that, you know, I fought a rodeo that Creek Young came to or who, you know, or Denton Fugate. So you feel like you kind of talk to them like Ernie, somebody you've hung out with, you know, you've been with him. You've watched him for years. And that's so cool to kind of have that feeling of like, hey, I actually know him. You know, man, I know his kids. I know him. I know every, you know, it's so cool. And you're so proud of your friends when they can pull those kind of accomplishments.
Sure thing, man. Absolutely. And you know, we're talking about it now. I'm actually on the Cowboy Channel right now, so I might be able to give you updates. I don't want to spoil it for you, though. You're going to go back and watch it.
Hey, we're here to talk bull riding and rodeo. So, you know, man, those are the deals. There's so many good extreme bulls going on. I looked at Ernie's schedule just for the next, like, he had it for the next week or maybe 2 weeks. I mean, it was Weatherford Extreme Bulls. Then it was Weatherford Rodeo, you know, Oklahoma, it was all those deals that he's been going to, and you're looking there, you know, Woodward, Oklahoma's going on. He was going there. Then end of the month is Reno, and it's just like such a cool deal to look at that list of places he's going. And those Extreme Bulls events actually give those bull riders, they kind of give them an advantage. It's not a rodeo. It's a straight bull riding sanctioned by the PRCA, and those guys can go make a check that they don't get to make anywhere else. You know, they don't have to fight added money with all the other events. It's just a one-night bull riding, winner-take-all kind of deal. And that's cool for a guy like Ernie. That's where he can make some money. Go in there and ride two bulls, get you a paycheck, add to the world standings, and, you know, you pad that pocket to get you to the next rodeo. So be interested to see how it all shapes up. I did see it, and I'm not just trying to talk about Ernie, but most people don't know this. He was on a tear last year, Ernie Corson, and he got hurt at Reno, and Bull pulled him down and just crushed his face. Ernie was a guy that wore a cowboy hat. He was hat down everywhere he went. This bull pulled him down and just, I mean, knocked him out, hurt him bad. And that kind of kept him out pretty much the whole month of July, and that kept him from making the world finals. He got behind.
Right.
He finished the year in the top 20, but he just couldn't get back to that top 15. It's going to be cool to see a guy like Ernie go back to Reno, because Ernie is the kind of guy that, like, that kind of grit, and he's not one that's scared of anything. And so it won't be like a, well, I got hurt at Reno last year, I'm not going to go back there. That guy will go to Reno, and he'll be hell-bent on winning it. I can guarantee you that. So just to be cool to see how the month of June shapes up and you know, at the end of the month, hey, what the standings look like, because there's going to be some big moves in the PRCA world standings throughout the next month.
I hear you. Well, I'm actually curious, man, being that you know Ernie Corson. So is he, like, I know another Corson from Florida who was actually – pretty big in the state of Florida and made the PBR, was actually set the record in making his first debut PBR event and winning it.
Yep.
And that was in Jacksonville, Florida, and that was Brian Corson. And
I
was like, man, Brian Corson, he and I became good friends, and I've lost touch with him over the years, but I've always wondered, I'm like, man, is Ernie one of his relatives, you know? Is that another Corson in the bloodline? You know, Brian was from Plant City.
I'm sure it is, and they're all from right there around Okeechobee. And, you know, I never have thought Ernie about Brian Corson. When I first met Ernie, Ernie was traveling with Ricky Ringer. And Ricky and Brian Corson would have traveled together some. So, man,
there's such
a connection there. Like, I guarantee at some point, you know, they are kin or whatever. But, you know, Ernie's a fisherman, man, a straight commercial fisherman, dude, goes out on Lake Okeechobee, catches catfish all day. I mean, straight up country as country can be, just a Florida cracker who can ride bulls.
Right.
And there's so many of them guys down there that are great bull riders. And you know that from being from the state of Florida, man. It is cowboy country. Those guys, you know, they get on some of the meanest, just rankest, meanest, nastiest bulls you've ever been around, and they're not scared of them. And that's the thing, like, you take a guy like Ernie, people see Florida, and they go, well, man, he can't ride bulls in Texas. You know, he's from Florida. Ernie's seen bulls that are 20 times meaner than anything they're going to have in any pro rodeo he'll ever go to. You know that.
Yeah.
They pull them bulls out of
I grew up riding bulls in Florida, man. I know.
That's what I'm saying. Okeechobee and Davie and all those places, man, you better be a man when you step into those kind of pens, because that is where men go. That's where you go to cut your teeth and figure out how you separate the men from the boys, because those swamp rats, they don't play, and you know that.
No. Yes, sir. You're right about that. Well, I got to tell you, man, it's funny that you mentioned that, man. And then you mentioned guys like Ricky Ringer. Like, I haven't heard that name in ages, but Ricky used to call in our radio show a bunch when I first started the Making It radio shows. Ricky was top dog around, man. Him, Brian Corson, they did travel together. And they were at a lot of the same rodeos and competing, but they were also good friends. And I know Ricky Ringer pretty well. So,
hey, you know Ricky's still going?
Oh, he is. I know. I see him on the draw sheets and stuff on some of the pages, and I'm like, man, I can't believe he is still at it. That's why I'm always looking to see if Brian Corson's name pops up, because that guy, he's a lot older too, but, man, that guy he had no quit in him. He was the John Wayne of bull riders that I know of, man. He actually, funny story, he knocked me out at a water trough by accident because he don't know his own strength, man. He's just a brute, you know?
I never got to meet him. I heard plenty of stories about him, but just that Florida crew, man, that's one that people don't realize how many cowboys came out of the state of Florida that have went on and moved to different places. But there's so many of them that never left Florida. They just live on those ranches. They live in South Florida, and man, they are there for the course, and just some great, great hands. You take a guy like we just said at Ricky Ringer. He's 40 something years old, still riding bulls, and he's still taking people's money. So, just one of the greats. While we talking about the greats, I got a buddy going to call in tonight. We talked about it in the last few weeks. But, Scott, I had a great friend of mine, Mississippi's own, Mr. Dusty Myers. He's on the road this weekend, but he's going to call in and be our guest of the hour. So if you keep an eye on that switch box, just let me know when he buzzes in. And we'll
it's
be looking
funny
for
that
him.
You mentioned that because I've actually got his number posted right here on our line. So what do you say we bring him in?
Hey, let's go for it. I didn't know he was there.
He just popped in. Dusty Myers, how are you, my friend?
Good. How you been, sir?
Oh, it's been a long time since you and I had a conversation.
at least 10 years.
Yes, sir. You're right about
that,
man.
I'm not talking to him.
Jeremy,
yeah.
You're just jealous, man. Don't be jealous.
Yeah, I wish I could have a 10-year break from him. Well, we can make that happen. Yeah. What about it, Dusty? Where are you at this weekend? Tell us what part of the world you're in.
Well, I'm actually in Merrill, Wisconsin. We're up here for the Wisconsin River Pro Rodeo this weekend. I'm just kind of hanging out, sitting around here with some friends of ours and some of the committee, and just glad to be up north this time of year.
Yeah, it feels a little better up there than it does in Mississippi right now, right?
Well, I've actually got on a light jacket right now. I'm not going to lie. It's pretty nice up here.
Wow.
Well, just rub it in, you know. We're sweating to death in Alabama, and you're wearing a jacket, so I appreciate that.
And, you know, I'm built for cold weather, so if I'm
yeah,
wearing a jacket,
yeah.
It's kind of cold.
Yeah. Yeah, so, Scott, man, for everybody that doesn't know, we talked about him a little bit, but Dusty's right there from Jumpertown, Mississippi. Man, one of the best barrel men, one of the best entertainers in rodeo. I hate to boost his ego there. But, man, he does an amazing job. If you've ever had the chance to watch him, he is one of the best. He's one of my good friends, and I get the privilege of traveling with him a good bit. And, Dusty, I appreciate you joining us. We're just going to talk rodeo for a little bit and, man, talk about kind of your background and stuff. But I do appreciate you joining us, and we'll keep you on here as long as you want to stay. But you just let me know if you got to go, but if you don't mind.
No, I actually like being on the phone with you when you're complimenting me, so I'm almost down here as long as I can.
Yeah.
Get those compliments in there.
I can't tell him what I always do, trust me. I got to be nice. Yeah.
It's okay, Dusty. Last week he was talking bad about you, so this week he'll talk good about you, being that you're on.
Well, he's very inconsistent. Okay.
He is.
One minute he'll be talking good to my face, and then like 30 seconds later he'll be downing me to my face. So,
yeah.
But that's what friends do, I guess.
That's what friends are for. I got to keep you. You know, I got to keep you level. That's what it is. Got to keep you humble. Got to keep you down here with us. You know, with us bottom of the totem pole guys.
I hear you. Well, I'm still right there with
Dusty,
you, buddy.
So, tell me about how things have been going for you for the past, I don't know, maybe 10 years since you and I haven't talked. We used to talk a lot when we were at the IFR, you know, at the IPRA finals. But, man, what have you been up to here recently?
Man, I am trying to burn the roads up. Last 10 years, it's been a big change. I want to tell a background story about me and Scott. I met Scott back years and years ago when he kind of got this Making Eight started, back when you and Ross Hill were together.
I met you
through Ross. Me and Ross are real good buddies, and you were real good buddies with Ross. It was kind of a connection there. We actually met in Oklahoma City about probably 11, 12 years ago.
That would be correct.
And so we've known each other for a long time. I'm glad that you're back to doing this. It's awesome. But over the last 10 years, I've continued to just work the barrel. I worked a lot of rodeos over in IPRA, SRA, the PCA, a lot down in the southeast and kind of on the east side of the world. And then, I guess 7 years ago, I got talked into getting my PRCA card. And I've kind of got it. And just over the last few years, I've kind of took off. And now I kind of work about as many or more rodeos in the PRCA than I do anywhere else. But I still try to do as many IPRA rodeos and PCA rodeos as I can. But things have been great. I've been staying on the road.
How difficult is it for you to manage, like, between the two of them? I mean, you know, or going through the different associations. Obviously, there's not a lot of difference between the production or the rodeos themselves. They're about the same. But how difficult is it for you to keep track on which way you're headed?
Oh, a good schedule book. To be honest, nothing changes for me. I mean, to be honest, nothing really changes for me. Everything is basically the same. It doesn't matter on the associations. I get what you're saying,
right,
though, as far as, hey, do you know if you're going to a PRCA rodeo this weekend, or if you're going to an IPRA or a bull riding, or a different association this weekend? I kind of write them down in my book, but to me, I show up, I know the people, I do my job, I try not to change anything from week to week, whether I'm at the biggest rodeo or the smallest rodeo. I try to do the same job basically every weekend.
Yeah, and you do,
I understand
you do a great job. I'm going to jump in there. You kind of, I'll just be honest, Scott, he always stays humble, and he is one of my good friends, so I don't care to brag on him. But, you know, the last 10 years, like you said, it has been a big change. Dusty was a great bullfighter. Multiple times that we watched you work the IFR as a bullfighter, and then you did transition into a barrel man, and obviously you've made your career there. But, Scott, just a few years ago, you know, he was alternate to the NFR, so we've watched him. We give him a hard time for it, for being the alternate, but, I mean, that's one of the biggest honors in rodeo, and there's no doubt that within the next few years, you know, it wouldn't shock me to see Dusty right there working the NFR. We've watched him work the NFR Open. So, man, you've worked some of the biggest and some of the coolest rodeos in the country. But it's also cool that no matter what size rodeo you get to, when you come back to, you know, any kind of amateur rodeo or small stuff around the house, that's the same Dusty Myers that they're going to get that Colorado Springs got for the NFR Open or wherever he's at from week to week. You know, he doesn't take off because it's a smaller rodeo. He's going to give the fans the same show, and that's something that I do admire about him, because it would be easy to say, well, you know, this is a small amateur rodeo, I'm not going to do my good acts, or I'm going to take it easy, I'm not going to tell my good jokes. You know, he's the same guy for – the small rodeo or the big rodeo. And that's something that does make those great entertainers. So,
sure.
You know, Dusty, you said it best, you know, you're on the road, you're on a big run right now. And we've watched you at some really big rodeos, but, you know, me and you travel a lot. You also talk about it. You know, some of your favorite rodeos are just kind of getting to work for different stock contractors. And it's those stock contractors that feel like family. So, you know, some of your year, you might be out west or you might be in the southeast. We had it a few weeks ago right there, Hiawassee, Georgia, working for Robin Brooks and Josh Brooks. You get to work for 4L and Diamond S, you know, Charlie Lowry and Miss Wanda. It's those relationships that you've built over the last 10 years with those stock contractors and those families. You know, that's what makes rodeo so cool. So if you don't care, just kind of hit on, you know, some of those families you do get to work for and, you know, what some of those people mean to you.
Well, I'm going to be honest. There's a guy he's worked the NFR last few years as an announcer. His name is Roger Mooney. All of us know Roger. And basically anybody that ever rodeo knows Roger. Roger told me something years ago. He always said this saying, as long as you stay humble, you'll never stumble. And I've always tried to do that. And I think that as long as you're humble and you can go in and do your job, you'll always have a job. But going back to the family part of it, I never want to forget where I come from. I always like working for the people that helped me get started in our business. And a lot of my favorite people, there's not a knock to anybody that I work for, because I work for a lot of great different stock contractors. And I've worked for some of the oldest, most historic names in the world. And I've worked for some of the youngest. But some of my favorites, like I said, is Robin and Josh Brooks of Southern Rodeo Company. Charlie and Wanda Lowry are probably two of my favorite people in this world. They own 4L and Diamond S. They're the same people everywhere you see them. They're great Christian people. And then I really love Strawberry Pruitt over there on the East Coast. He does a lot of SRA rodeos. And those people have always been, they've always been good to me. They're loyal to me. I look like, it's not really like when I go work for them, I'm not working a rodeo. I'm going to a family reunion and there just happens to be a rodeo there. I love it. I get tickled. Like some of these rodeos I go to, I'm nervous because I haven't worked for the people or it's got a big history behind the rodeo. I never feel nervous when I go work for those people because I know that they're gonna feel like they're loyal to me and they're gonna give me an opportunity to go out there and perform. So a lot of times if I try something new, I'll try it at one of their rodeos because I know they're gonna be encouraging and they're gonna say, hey, you might want to try this or might want to do that. And I know they're not going to get mad or upset if it don't go the way it needs to go. Because in our business, you have to keep trying newer stuff unless you just want to stay stuck behind. And I feel comfortable with those rodeos because they're the kind of people that are going to laugh if something goes wrong. Then they're going to pat me on the back and tell me what they would do different. And that's what I love about the business, and I love those people. And it just so happens they're all kind of from the Southeast where I kind of grew up rodeoing. They're my kind of people. But I do enjoy going all over the world and seeing the different stock contractors out there and the different rodeo committees. Like, I'm up here with some people. This is my second time to do this rodeo in the last 3 years. And this committee up here is one of the most – just one of the best committees I've ever worked for. They're the nicest people. Their hospitality is out of this world. And I sit around with them. Just a while ago, we were sitting around out there just the shooting the bull, and it was fun being up here. But as the old saying goes, there's no place like home. And I'll always feel at home when I'm working for those people down there in the Southeast.
No, yeah, I get it.
That makes perfect sense.
Without a doubt. I mean, and it's so cool. You know, I don't mean that you get jealous of people, but it is cool to see your buddies go succeed. You see your buddies go to big rodeos and get to travel and stuff and go different places. But I also understand that 100%, man. I go to work for new people every now and then. And when I do go work for a new contractor, you do kind of have that outsider feeling. You know, you don't know them. They don't know you as well. It takes, you know, a few rodeos before you do get to know each other. But like you just said, there's no place like home. You know, I was right there with Southern Rodeo this weekend at good old Shadydale, Georgia. You know, one of the most backwoods, middle of nowhere rodeos you'll ever go to. But, man, both nights, you know, there's thousands of people at this rodeo. You want that rodeo to go so good because you care so much about the Southern Rodeo crew. You know, at the end of the night at 2 a.m., we're all out there playing kickball together. You know, it just shows, like, what the rodeo family is. You know, it's not a just go do your job and go to the hotel. I mean, we're all hanging out all night. I mean, we're out there with everything from the kids to the adults, man, having a kickball game in the middle of the rodeo, so, or in the middle of the rodeo arena. So, man, just that family atmosphere, man, that's what rodeo is all about. That's why we love it so much. But, yeah, just great times. And while we got you, Dusty, let's talk a little bit of background. You know, I know your story, and for the people who don't, like I said, you're right there from Mississippi, and you had a dad who was, man, all about rodeo. So tell us how you got into the bullfighting, and talk a little bit about Mr. Carey, how he helped you get started.
Well, I grew up in our household. Rodeo was the only thing. You know, my dad rodeoed. He was a kind of a regional cowboy. My dad never really traveled off too far. He kind of stayed close. He rode bulls and bareback horses, and my dad fought bulls, and he was a clown. But my dad was, I consider my dad a real cowboy. My dad was a guy that could tend the animals. He could tend the horses. He was a horse trainer. He was a horse shoer. We had cattle growing up. We always had different animals around the place. You know, my dad was a real cowboy. My dad could doctor them. He could take care of them. He could shoe them. He could break them. He could ride them. And rodeo was just, that was the only thing when I was growing up. My dad just loved rodeo so much. And fortunately, he got to work for several people over the years. And some guys passed through there that he got to meet, and two of the guys are two of my biggest influences in the world, and that were friends with my dad. And one was Rudy Burns, and the other was Liesl Harris. And those were the two guys that I grew up wanting to be. I used to go. My dad didn't believe in. He never believed in vacations. My dad said, "I work too hard to spend my money and throw it away on a vacation." But every year, we would always go to the Mid-South Fair in Memphis, Tennessee. And it was Harper & Morgan's, one of their bigger rodeos there. It was like 8 or 9 performances long. We would go to Memphis and stay for the whole weekend just so we could go hang out with Rudy Burns in his trailer and watch Liesl Harris. And from as long as I can remember, I mean, as far back as I can possibly remember, probably at 2 or 3 years old, I've always been a huge fan of Liesl Harris and Rudy Burns. Now, Liesl Harris is the end-all, be-all. I think he's probably the greatest rodeo clown to ever walk into an arena. That's just my opinion, too. Rudy Burns is right there with him, along with Keith Isley or Quell Dobbs or a lot of those guys. But that's what I wanted to grow up. Like, you immediately, when I saw Liesl Harris, is what I wanted to do for a living. That's just it from right there. I never wanted to be anything else but a rodeo clown. Well, I started riding bulls and or calves and steers and junior bulls through junior rodeo. And at 13 years old, I decided I wanted to be a bullfighter, really because I was terrible at all the other stuff. But I wanted to be a bullfighter. And my dad used to fight bulls with a guy named M.C. Merritt. And he owned 5M Rodeo Company out of Myrtle, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. He called M.C., and M.C. agreed to bring me on to teach me how to fight bulls. His son, Buddy, was a really good bullfighter. And I got started there at MC's place, but for the first year, I was not allowed to get in front of a bull. I had to set the pens up. I had to feed. We had to load cattle. We had to work around the arena because he believed that anybody that got in the arena needed to know every other job in rodeo first. So I used to have to work with him. I was a laborer. You know, he wanted me to be around the bulls and the cows, so in the summertime, I would go stay with MC. Now, I was 12 years old. Around this time, and then when I was 13, I wanted to fight bulls. He said, "Well, you got to be around here a year and work." So I was around there just as a kid, and I was, you know, carrying panels and feeding and riding in the truck with MC and learning cattle, learning horses, learning different things. Well, when I was 13, my very first rodeo was actually in Alabama. The very first rodeo I got to buy a card for and fight bulls at was at Coleman, Alabama. I was 13 years old, didn't really know what I was doing. But I was out there, and I got to fight bulls. And luckily, over the years, I got to fight bulls with some guys that really, really taught me a good bit about fighting bulls. Buddy was a start guy. He started me fighting bulls, and then he kind of retired. I was fortunate enough, around 14, 15 years old, I got to fight a few bulls with Matt Baldwin, which I think is, in my opinion, probably the most underrated bullfighter of all time. He was just absolutely fantastic. I didn't learn a lot from Matt because I was watching Matt, and Matt was so good you couldn't tell what he was doing. It's almost like the great bullfighters you don't notice. And watching Matt, you didn't notice anything he's doing because he was so talented at it. But I didn't really learn a lot from Matt because Matt was always kind of quiet back then. You know, he'd say, "Hey, do this or do that," but he really didn't teach me a lot. But I was around guys like him, and what he could do is made you step up your game because if you wasn't doing your job, well, he'd really make you look stupid. So I got fortunate to fight bulls with him and some other guys. Of course, back then, and I'm not an old guy, but this has been 25 years ago. 25 years ago, a lot of your rodeos, they didn't hire two bullfighters. They just had one bullfighter. So I had to learn a lot on my own. And then I kind of started traveling up north, and a stock contractor named Rudy Calzavera owns Big Hat Rodeo. Now, Jeremy knows him really well because Jeremy works for the family. He's been up there. He's fought bulls for Big Hat Rodeo. When I was 18, I got the chance to go up there, and I went up north. And back then, Rudy and them used to put on 25 to 30 rodeos. They would start about the 1st of June. They would end about the end of September. And they did a lot of fairs and different things. I worked for them for several years, and somehow I ended up getting voted in as a bullfighter at the international finals. And I never thought in my mind that I was that good of a bullfighter. There were so many other guys that were better than me. But at that point back then, there was guys like Chad Dowdy, Paul Bonds, Ricky Thornberry, a lot of those guys that fought bulls really, really good. And I was glad to be there, but I didn't feel like I needed to be there and some of those guys watching me. But I was lucky enough to get to go do that four times, but my heart was never really into the bullfighting. I had a little bit of talent to fight bulls, but I always knew I wanted to clown. So fast forward a couple years, I hurt my knee, and I was going to be out for a few months. And Brandon McClagan, he's a rodeo announcer from Missouri. Brandon's been a real good friend of mine for a long time. Brandon called me and said, "Hey, since you're down," he said, "I'm going to do some small rodeos over here in Arkansas and Oklahoma, and they need somebody to tell some jokes because they don't have a clown. Would you like to do it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'd kind of like to." And that's how I broke into clowning.
Okay.
So that's kind of how I got into it. I was just really kind of recovering from an injury. Broke into clowning, started, I made me a few little old acts, something I could haul in the back of a truck, because back then I didn't have enough money to afford a big camper or a big trailer or anything like that. And had a little truck, and I'd put a camper on top or on the back of it, and I'd throw my axe in it, and I'd go to these little rodeos. Well, 2 years later, I was getting hired to do more rodeos as a clown than I was fighting bulls, and I'm not going to lie, the pay was better too. So I was going to do the rodeos, and that's just kind of where it took off from there. I got to work for a lot of good people. There's a man named Bobby Rowe, and Bobby Rowe was a showman, and Bobby passed away this past year. But him and his wife had Imperial Rodeo. Bobby was a heck of a showman, and his wife was a first-class performer. They taught me a lot about showmanship and about why you do things, when you do things, how you should do things, what to wear. I remember Lenore jumped all over me because back then I thought it was cool to wear kind of darker colors and things like that. And she's like, if you want to be a clown, you got to be bright. You know, and she was the first one. She made me a shirt, and it was real bright. You know, it was back then everybody wore red, white, and blue. And she got me a red, white, and blue shirt with a fringe on it. And she really colored me up. And then they stuck me with a rodeo announcer, and I'll give him full credit. And anybody that's listening to this, if you're a rodeo clown, you cannot do one thing without a rodeo announcer in that arena. You're a team.
That's true.
I've never seen I've said this a million times. I've never seen a great rodeo clown make a decent announcer good, but I've seen a good announcer make a decent rodeo clown great.
Wow.
So you need your announcers. I mean, I don't know how to preach this. You need your announcers. If you're an entertainer, if you're a clown or specialty act, you rely so much on your announcers. I've had so many announcers make me look good. I make the joke. I've had so many good announcers carry me through my career. I owe everything to my announcers, because those guys can make me look great or they can make me look bad. You can only do so much on your own, but I was very fortunate to work with a man named Jerry Bellis. Jerry Bellis was kind of like the Bob Tallman of the IPRA, and that's not an knock to Mr. Jerry when I say that. He was a legend in the IPRA, where Bob Tallman is a legend in the PRCA. Jerry took a young clown like myself, and he transformed me into a performer. I was just a clown. I was just a guy that put on makeup and baggies and go out there and try to tell some jokes. He worked on my timing, time to go over the why I'm out there. He gave me a reason to be out there. He wanted me to watch things. I owe a lot of stuff to Jerry Bellis, and Jerry Bellis he's still alive right now. He's an older gentleman right now. Over the last few years, he's had some health issues. I hope he's working through it. Him and his wife I wouldn't be where I'm at now without Jerry Bellis helping me at that point in my career, because he taught me more in the first couple years of me clowning than anybody could teach me anywhere else. So I owe a huge, huge debt to Jerry Bellis and Jeannie Bellis. I mean, they basically made my whole career.
Right.
But over the years,
you know, that's what. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, man, that's what's so cool about rodeo is, you know, it's not a sport that you can just make it on your own. You know, you have to have help. You have to have those people in your corner, and that's those relationships that. You're a green behind the ears clown, just young, getting started, and the veterans of the game see the potential in you to kind of pick you up and take you under their wing and make sure that you make it, you know. And that's so cool to always recognize them, always give back and give them that credit that they were the ones that helped you get there. So, you know, that's all I was going to say. Just kind of what rodeo's about, and that's why we love it so much, is because nobody gets there without some help.
Oh, absolutely. If I had to start naming a list of people that helped me in this business, we'd be on here for the next week and a half.
Yeah,
I mean,
no kidding.
I couldn't ever, and I hope that somewhere down the line that I've been able to help somebody else with something. You know, I always try to remember those guys, because not only do I recognize Jerry and Jeannie Bellis, they helped me with so much, But in our business, a lot of times, guys, I don't want to say the word jealous, but sometimes jealousy, when you're doing the same thing, say if you're a rodeo clown, say a lot of them old-timers didn't necessarily want to help you because they thought that you might come in there and take their job.
Yeah.
Well, Kenny Schopacher from Baum, Florida, and Mike Wentworth from Kentucky, those two guys probably helped me more than any other clown when it come to, hey, where did I get this or where did I get that or how do I make this bomb or how do I do this or where did you get your microphone? I bet I pestered them two guys to death, but those two guys would help me. And just last weekend or 2 weeks ago, excuse me, me and Jeremy were actually in Hiawatha, Georgia, and it was the first time I had seen Mike Wentworth in person in a few years. Mike was there with his wife, Lindsay. She was roping. Mike had Friday night off. He had a show Saturday and Sunday. And I told Mike that. I said, man, I've come a long way because of how you helped me. And it's special people like that, that just a little bit of a lending word or just, hey, you can get this over here, or, hey, this might help you in the long run by doing this. Those little things that they showed you can carry you a long way. And I hope mm-hmm. that in our business that people will try to help each other just a little bit. Because you never know when that one little piece of advice or that one step that you're showing that person can help them. I mean, because I've been helped more than probably anybody in the business. I mean, I've had so many people stick their hand out to help me or just give me a little bit of encouragement over the years, and it means the world. It really does.
Dusty, let me ask you this. In your career, what has been one of your most memorable events? I won't say your favorite because they're all your favorites at one point or another, but what's your most memorable event that you've been able to work or a particular year you worked a certain event?
Oh, man, that's a loaded question there, Scott. I guess would say probably the most special to me actually happened early this year.
Okay.
Because I was such a big Liesl Harris and Rudy Burns fan, and growing up, all of us are kind of from the same area, or Scott, you used to be from our part of the world.
Right.
The Harper Morgan rodeos, when I was growing up, the Harper Morgan rodeos, if you went to a good rodeo, especially if you were from Mississippi or Alabama, Harper Morgan was the end-all, be-all. They were as professional
right.
as you could possibly get.
Yes,
so
sir.
This year I actually got to work the Dixie Nationals.
Wow.
And it wasn't the actual rodeo itself that made me feel special. It was the getting to go in there and go into the locker room where Liesl Harris changed and Rudy Burns changed. Because those two guys were about the only two guys to do the Dixie Nationals for 50-something years. And going in there to follow your heroes back there. And then, and when Liesl passed away back in 2020, they actually put a big mural on the wall there at
wow.
Jackson, Mississippi, there in the Coliseum. And just to go down there and see his picture on this big mural and one of his things, that probably meant the world to me. The rodeo itself was great. I'm not taking anything away from the rodeo, but getting to be there because my whole life I've always strived to get to be like Liesl Harris or Rudy Burns. Those mm-hmm. those are the guys that I wanted to be like. Those are the rodeo clowns, and that's what I tell myself all the time is that the sport is changing.
Right.
And, there's what we call the old school rodeo clown, and then now what we call the entertainer. And
okay.
there's nothing wrong with the entertainer, but I've always wanted to be the old school rodeo clown, and I've always wanted to
right.
be the clown that I grew up watching. And so for me to get to do that rodeo, following my heroes, that was probably the most special thing. When you first walk in the arena the very first night, you could have shot me after the first performance, and then I'd have been, man, there's nothing that could have been better. When I walked into Jackson, Mississippi, it would be the same to me as walking into Las Vegas out there at the Thomas and Mack.
Sure.
There wasn't
yeah.
a better feeling to me. So
yeah, that
I
was,
guess that would be my most special
super
moment.
Cool. Yeah, that was a super cool accomplishment, man. And, you know, you talk so much about it, but Liesl Harris and Rudy Burns and all that, But if you ever get a chance to watch, you know, watch Dusty in action, watch him perform, you know, you see a lot of those lethal mannerisms. And you can tell that you're a student of the game. And there's no two better, especially in the Southeast, but there's no two better clowns to model yourself after than the Lethal Harris's, the Rudy Burns. Man, you talk about Mike Wentworth. You know, that's the guy that we get to work with some. And, you know, he's a great, like you said, just a great mentor that you had. And that shows just kind of how important it is to have that start. I was right there with you. You know, you talk about Jackson, Mississippi, and going to the Rodeo of the Mid-South there in Memphis, and that was a cool thing that you remember as a child. Mine was Montgomery. You know, we all went to the Montgomery Pro Rodeo in Alabama, and that's where I got to see Lethal. And that was part of my childhood, was getting to go and see Harper and Morgan. You know, there was the big semi, the greatest show on dirt. Man, it was like, you know, Christmas came to town. It was just so cool to go see the Harper and Morgan Rodeo. You knew Lethal Harris was going to be there. You know, that time, I remember as a kid, some of it was when Phil was announcing with him. And then the later years, you know, it was just always such a great rodeo. And that's where I fell in love with it. You know, that was where, when I watched that rodeo, I just knew right then that's where my life was going to go. That was the route that I wanted to take. You know, and mine was watching the Wrangler Bullfights. That's when the Wrangler Bullfighting Tour was still going on. And I remember seeing the Sparks brothers there. I remember seeing Greg Roomer there. It was so cool to think back to those years of being a child, seeing bullfighters, seeing rodeo clowns, seeing Lethal. And you just knew right then, like, this is where I'm going to go. This is what my life's going to revolve around. You know, and I'm going to find a way to make it in this sport. I didn't have a dad or a mom or dad that knew anything about rodeo. They've encouraged me. They've always pushed me. They've always helped me. But, man, you know, you had to figure it out on your own, and you had to, you know, they wanted to help so much. But it was just so cool to know that was the route I wanted to take. And, hey, right there with you, you know, you see Lethal Harris in action. That's one that you'll never forget. I'm with you. I think he was the greatest of all time. So just cool memories. I remember going there, and Huntsville, Alabama was still Loretta Lynn Championship Rodeo. That, you know, that was the IPRA, but it was such a big rodeo. I can remember that as a kid, going to see it. That was just another childhood memory. So some of them same names you talked about, I'm sure that was the ones I was watching as a kid. You just didn't know it.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talk about that rodeo. Longhorn was huge. And a lot of people that are listening to this probably won't remember Longhorn Rodeo, but Longhorn Rodeo was kind of the Harper Morgan before Harper and Morgan. Bruce Lurkey used to teach a school on how to produce rodeos. And a couple of his students were James Harper. And then the other one was Steve Gander that eventually started the World's Toughest. So they actually learned from the man that had Longhorn Rodeo. And another cool piece, now that you brought it up, the very last Longhorn Rodeo was at Huntsville, Alabama.
Yep.
The very last one in existence. Bruce had already passed away, and the very last Longhorn Rodeo was there in Huntsville, and I actually got to clown the very last Longhorn Rodeo.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, that meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
Yes, Heather Lurkey, which was Bruce's daughter, she was trying to carry on Longhorn there. She put on the very last show. We were there at the Huntsville Coliseum, and I actually worked it with Jerry Bellis, the man that was the voice of Longhorn Rodeo.
Yep.
And the story on Longhorn, a lot of people don't know this, but Longhorn, he taught it, and it was the big IPRA rodeos. Those were the big IPRAs. Well, back in the 70s and 80s, it was the IPRA and the PRCA. There were other small associations, but those were the two big dogs. It was kind of like East Coast versus West Coast. Well, Longhorn was the East Coast. PRC rodeos were kind of the West Coast. Well, when Harper and Morgan started their rodeos, they kind of went in there and kind of picked and choosed out of Longhorn. And I can remember Lethal Harris went to work for Harper and Morgan. That's where he started with Harper and Morgan, because they loved him at the Longhorn Rodeo. So they come in there and picked him out. They picked a few other people out. They basically took the Longhorn crew. The only one they didn't get was Jerry Bellis. Jerry Bellis was very loyal to Bruce Lurkey and didn't think that Harper Morgan would get as big as it did. And I asked Jerry years later, I was like, do you ever wish you'd have jumped? He said, no. He said, even though I look back and I said, man, those were some awesome rodeos. He said, I always felt like I was loyal to Bruce, and I'm glad I stayed. He said, but sometimes, yeah, he said, man, that could have been me, you know, at the NFR,
yeah,
because of the Harper Morgan rodeos. Me, he said, he said, unfortunately, he said, because I didn't go, and this is a joke around Jerry, he said, unfortunately, they didn't take me. He said, so they got this little nobody to start announcing for them. Well, that,
yeah,
little nobody was Phil Gardenhire.
Yeah.
And he's probably went down as the greatest rodeo announcer of all time. Like, if you asked your Bob Tallman's and you asked your Boyd Paul Hamus's and Roger Mooney's,
mm-hmm,
they all respect Phil Gardenhire because he was the man. And that's just a little bit of history there with the Longhorn and the Harper Morgan rodeos. And but yeah, actually, I got to work the very last Huntsville rodeo, and that meant a lot to me, even though it wasn't the same Longhorn,
yeah,
rodeo is what it was, but it was the last official Longhorn rodeo. So that,
wow,
was a little history for me too. So, but I love what we do. I mean, there's not a better job in this world. It's a tough job. A lot of people think, well, how can clowning be tough? It ain't necessarily the clowning. It's the traveling. It's the being away from,
right,
home. It's the being away from family. It's being on the road when things are not going right. But I wouldn't trade it for anything in the face of this earth. And I still am a fan at heart. I grew up as a fan with my dad. I'm out in the arena. So not only am I getting paid to do what I do, but I'm getting paid to watch what I love to watch.
Right.
I'm getting paid to be a fan in the arena. And there's some nights that I'll suck it all in, and in my mind I'll get to thinking, man, I'm getting to be a part of this. I can't believe I'm actually out here in this arena. You know, where legends have been. Because I'll never consider myself like some of those guys. No matter what, to me, no matter how good or whatever rodeos you get to work or what you get to do, you'll never be Liesl Harris or Rudy Burns or Keith Isley or Quayle or Leon Coffey or so many of the greats before you, because I just don't believe that they make those guys anymore like that.
Right.
And that's just how I feel, but I'm glad to be in those arenas that those guys performed in at one time.
Yeah. No, that's what to me is so cool. You know, just to get to see your buddies go to some of those places, or, you know, you think in your mind, like, man, wonder what it'd be like to, I hate to envy anything, but what would it be like to step into the dirt at Cheyenne or step into here? You know, it's those goals we all want to obtain, but, you know, you're well on the way, and it was so cool to see you at Jackson. I know that was a big accomplishment for you. You got a big summer run. We're proud of you. Want to see you keep going. But before we do get you off here, it is the Ross Hill Hour. So if you could tell us one good Ross Hill story that you can remember. I know you traveled in a good bit. It can be funny. It can be a Ross Hill bullfighting story. Just a typical Ross Hill story. We always like to hear them. So
I don't know if I can tell some of my Ross Hill stories on here.
Hey, I can't either. I keep mine to myself too. But there's plenty of good ones we can always share.
You know, the one thing that I can always say about Ross Hill, if you ever met him, you never forgot him. And when you say his name, no matter who you say it to,
yeah,
they get this funny expression on their face and they smile.
Yep.
And Ross was a fun haver. Anybody that ever knew Ross, there wasn't a dull moment. He was a salesman. Anybody that knows Ross, none of the stories change because Ross didn't change. Ross is one of those people.
That's right.
That did not change because somebody else was around. He was Ross Hill 24/7. He didn't care who was there. If Ross had to say something, he didn't really have a filter. And he was Ross Hill 24/7. But I do have a funny story. He called me one time, and he said, hey, he said, I booked us a bull riding to work in Cocoa Beach, Florida. Now, there's more to the story, but I'm going to tell you the parts that I can't tell. And he says, hey, we're going to have to carry your truck.
And I'm like, okay, no problem. So we get my truck. We go to Cocoa Beach, Florida. And we pull up to the arena, and we're on a baseball field.
Yep.
And I'm literally, we're on a baseball field. There's no dirt in the arena. The only dirt in the arena is right out there around the pitcher's mound. And I don't know the Bulls. He had worked for Marty Johns a couple times, so he had kind of been down in that area. And they were all talking about this one great big, and he was a great big old Bramer. I'll never forget him. He was like a blue and black speckled Bramer. And they were talking about this big old Bramer that was mean, that was going to, you know, he's going to get both of you. And they were all making jokes all afternoon. And personally, there was a Bull that affected Ross Hill, period. Not mentally.
Mm-hmm.
Ross had that mental – he did have that – the one thing about Ross I admired probably more than anything was he might have been socked out in his body or in his mind, but he didn't let anybody else know it.
Yeah,
he had such a strong mental game. But he told him, he said, yeah, okay. He said, well, he ain't seen me yet. Well, he's talking about this Bull, and everybody's like, oh, this Bull's bad. He's bad. And then when you looked at him, he was big, too. So not only was he big and intimidating-looking, had big horns, he was bad, supposedly. So they're bucking him during the bull ride. He comes out, and the guy makes maybe a round or two, and he gets pitched off, and he lands right at my feet. And this bull turns around. He drops his head, and I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're going to have to just take it. Well, he did. He kind of bumped me, but he turned around, and Ross caught him by the head, and we kind of went out in the arena. And Kenny Schottparker couldn't get in his clown barrel because Kenny had a bad back. He couldn't bend over. And so Kenny's barrel was out there in the middle, out there by the pitcher's mound. We make a round or two, and, yes, the bull was hot. Not nothing meaner than what I'd seen before, but he was hot, and I survived, and somehow I got around him, and we got to the arena, and he comes to the barrel, and I'm working the barrel. Well, when I turn the barrel over, Kenny can't be in it, and his barrel is aluminum with no padding on the inside, so it probably didn't weigh 75, 80 pounds, you know. This bull hits it, and he takes it away from me. And I'm sitting there staring at this bull in the face. We're like 2 foot apart. And I'm melted. I'm like, oh, you know, here it is, right in the middle of the pen. Well, here comes Ross. Ross comes by and grabs him, and Ross mixes this bull up so bad. This bull didn't know what to do. Well, Ross runs and gets up on the pitcher's mound, and he's looking at him like he's a pitcher talking to the catcher. He's waving it off.
Yeah.
Nope. Yep. And he throws his fake, and he busts his fake on the pitcher's mound. This bull takes. Well, then Ross makes another round, and he runs up the pitcher's mound and jumps off the pitcher's mound. And in midair, he looks like he's doing some kind of karate swan dive.
Yeah.
And there's a picture. And me and you were talking about this not long ago. I've never seen the picture except for the original time that they took it. We saw it right there at the arena. I've never seen the picture. You said you've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it before. He had it on social media, but I'll see if Amber can find it because it's a great picture.
And he is jumping up in the air. And Scott, you'd love to see his picture because he was up in the air and he had his arms. He kind of looked like the Karate Kid coming off with like this crane stand.
Uh-huh.
And this bull is in midair too on him. But the myth of this bull being that bad, Ross just busted it all to heck and back. This bull could not catch him. He wouldn't have let him catch him. But Ross was just one of those people. He was not an in between guy. You either really liked him or you really didn't like him. But he would always tell you what was on his mind. There was no sugarcoating. There was no anything. If you were fighting bulls with him, you better step your game up because he would tell you that you were not doing your job. He'd tell you suck, whatever. Step it up. But the thing about him was you were going to have a good time if you hung around him.
That's
because there was no not having a good time with Ross Hill.
Well, you said it best, Scott. It's 8:59. We're about to get cut off. So
we are.
I hate to close you out, Dusty, but you said it best. These are good times. We've had a good time with you, man. We appreciate you calling. That's going to be the end of our hour. But, dude, I do appreciate it. And
I appreciate
great
both
catching
of you.
Catch up
with us again, Dusty. Definitely.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you, Dusty. Be safe, have fun, and we'll catch up another time.
I appreciate you guys. Y'all be careful. Thank you for having me.
You bet. I appreciate it.
All right, Jeremy, we are fresh out of time, my friend.
Yep, we are. It was a good one. I appreciate you having me. Man, I'm glad Dusty joined us. So before it cuts off, one more time, Raw Feel Hour, we appreciate it to all of our listeners. Come back and join us next week. We'll be right back Tuesday night, 8 o'clock.
You bet. You bet.
I've been trampled, dragged, and gored. I've been battered, bruised, and sore. I can't count the many times that I've been thrown. I've spent many hours alone with broken dreams and broken bones when the bull has been the one to win the gold. But bull riding is the only life I know. There have been many times as well I've drawn a bull as mean as hell, and I didn't last a full 8 second ride. As I lay there in the dirt like a wrinkled dirty shirt, I've been thankful to the clown who saved my hide. And I remember one time when this one bull tossed me to the wind, and he hung around to nudge me where I fell. When I limped away at last, with my dreams of glory smashed, I could swear I heard him laughing to himself. Well, I've been trampled, dragged, and gored. I've been battered, bruised, and sore. I can't count the many times that I've been thrown. I've spent many hours alone, with broken dreams and broken bones. The bull has been the one to win the gold. But bull riding is the only life I know. So don't ever count me down when you see me hit the ground. It's not my first time, it sure won't be my last. When you gasp and catch your breath, thinking sure I've met my death. Well, the bull has won the round, but I'll be back. I've been trampled, dragged, and gored. I've been battered, bruised, and sore. I can't count the many times that I've been thrown. I've spent many hours alone, broken dreams and broken bones, when the bull has been the one to win the gold. But bull riding is the only life I know. There's always one more bull to conquer down the road. One more bull, one more rodeo.